Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
The Around the NFL Podcast is a spicy meatball.
It's a spicy meatball. Oh, from the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL. I'm Dan Hansis. Got some heroes with me. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. All right, good job, NFL. I see you. I see what you're doing. You're trying to clear the decks. Nothing to see here. Drop some news on Monday, although we know that story is not over yet around Deshaun Watson. Now let's throw out the next wave, the second worst story of the offseason. Let's try to like get that off the table ahead of the Hall of Fame game. The effort's there, Greg. You got to give him credit for the effort being there.
Well, and I appreciate the way they structured it so we could get the mini-sode out Monday, kind of clear our decks here, but also gave us a nice meaty topic to start this show with. So maybe they're planning it around us.
Thank you, League.
There were several funny moments leading up today's taping. One of them was when Mark realized in real time that we were actually doing an extra show this week, that the Monday show wasn't replacing one of the initially scheduled shows.
I did not think it was replacing.
And you could actually see the lights go out behind the eyes. But
not
true. It looks like you've recovered now.
Well, no. So, you know, we decide typically a day before what we're going to do with our segment outside of the news part of the show. And we all put
You talk meatballs, now we're talking how the sausage gets made.
We all put our certain personal stamp, and we prepare in our own ways for it. And this was, which will come later in the week, but it was a quite involved segment that took a lot of imagination and I thought, you know, personal.
Why are you keeping it a secret?
Well, it's team slogans, and I spent like 3 hours coming up with a variety of team slogans.
And we're going to do it Wednesday.
I found out 4 minutes before when we were going to tape an hour ago that we're switching gears. And so it was suddenly, you know, that's why I felt a little agitated.
Yeah, we all were dealing with it at the same time. We all found out that we had to switch the schedule, and some handled it more gracefully than others. But here we are.
I didn't have a meltdown or anything. I didn't even say anything verbally
no
for
meltdown.
The most part.
No meltdown.
Annoyed by it.
Yeah, okay, see? I'm just saying there was a lot of concern on your part.
It's not the way
the
I would like
nature of things. Yeah.
Pre-show energy.
You're a prep guy. You're a big-time prep guy.
Yes.
To your point, though, it's Big Raj week. It does feel like a Big Raj week because, frankly, this story, and we can get into it, you know, in a minute. But like, it'd been so off the radar, I didn't necessarily believe he was going to drop the hammer as much as he did, which I think was a pleasant surprise. And then he still got this 3-day period, which is now down to 2, to decide on Watson, and I really think it's like his chance to be a hero. To like make to do something that his employees and the fans of the NFL, I think, for the most part, will really appreciate. And
you're referring to Watson specifically.
I'm saying Watson in terms of appealing that suspension. So I think those two things in a row would be a very positive week for Roger Goodell in a way that his discipline decisions in the past have often not been. It's a rare chance to go be a hero. So go be a hero, Raj.
And I'll also add, and yes, we're about to get into it, there is a neatness to the resolution of this Dolphins saga that almost feels It feels very convenient.
He did get the way this was resolved. To be fair, he's gotten some criticism about this one.
This one's buttoned up pretty tight. So we're going to get into that. We're going to also have some, Connor Orr team slogans. We're going to push to tomorrow. later today, Mark is okay. He's with us.
I am absolutely excited about what's occurring.
We're going to hit some training camp whispers instead to get you caught up on what's going on in camps. Training camps are obviously well underway now. And we're going to – what's kind of jumping out to us that's interesting. But first, yes, let's get to the news.
The way that the Dolphins simply pretended the rules did not exist is mind-boggling.
What if Ian gets an email or a text from someone upstairs? Like, can we, editorializing, you know, we don't like that from you too much.
I agree with him, but
yeah. I liked it. Graver, it took him back enough that he cut it. But it is. It is when the investigation of the Miami Dolphins is all said and done, the things that Brian Flores brought to light, so much of it, turned out to be absolutely true, and or maybe all of it. So let's get into it here. The NFL announced Tuesday that the Miami Dolphins will forfeit their 2023 first-round pick and 2024 third-round pick, while team owner Stephen Ross has been suspended through October 17th following an investigation into whether the organization violated league policies pertaining to the integrity of the game. This investigation was led by former U.S. attorney and SEC chairperson Mary Jo White, lasted 6 months, focused on two areas. And yes, there was tampering that involved Tom Brady and Sean Payton numerous times. But also notable here, Mark, the league found, or the investigation found, that the Brian Flores allegations of tanking and getting paid money, the head coach, to lose games a few seasons back was something that was done in jest or not in a serious manner. So there was no discipline in that department, which is very notable here. But otherwise, the Dolphins got banged.
They did. And that animal probably is annoyed by it. But I think that, to Greg's point, Roger Goodell did the right thing here. And it was a severe punishment. Ross is also being fined $1.5 million, which is probably like three dimes falling out of his pocket. I don't know what it. I don't know what an owner not being allowed to be around the team until October. That feels sort of like a hollow punishment to me. But the Dolphins, the Deshaun Watson scenario was called egregious, and that was a correct word for it. This is egregious. You've not seen a team do this. They tampered with Tom Brady after the 2019 season, after last season.
Patriot.
When he was a Patriot. And now if you think about it, because one big thing facing the Dolphins in general, they lose a first-round pick and a third-round pick. They have two first-round picks going into the next draft, but they lose one of those. This was the season where they were going to evaluate Tua and maybe decide, do we have the ammunition to go get his replacement if we want to move up and down the draft? Your pursuit of Tom Brady multiple times and of Sean Payton potentially strips your ability to control the draft and get the better quarterback down the road.
Right, because they still have an extra draft pick. They had a couple. Now they lose one. It's a serious punishment, and the wording that the NFL used in terms of the way that they tampered, that it was unprecedented in scope, was really saying something. Now, I was thinking, like, the reporting that Ben Volin did about this story in the Boston Globe sort of slept under the radar, and Florio backed it up as well back in April that they were trying to get Tom Brady to potentially become an owner and maybe eventually slash player, and he is a free agent after this offseason, so I don't think it's that crazy to think, like, if he wants to keep playing, he might not be on the Bucs next year, and the Dolphins were a pretty logical place considering he's had these two conversations. I don't foresee that happening now just because it would look so bad. But if he is on the Dolphins, he just lost, his own first-round pick for next year. Not going to be as good a team. If he wants to be a little bit of an owner there.
Yeah, and Stephen Ross said in a statement, Greg, you mentioned this, and it was just kind of funny, like the spin of it all. Ross's statement, the independent investigation cleared our organization on any issues related to tanking and all of Brian Flores' other allegations. As I have said all along, these allegations were false, malicious, and defamatory, and this issue is now put to rest. Is this the statement that they were supposed to put out if the decision was the other decision where they were cleared of all wrongdoing? I'm missing something there.
It's an absurd statement from a multi-billionaire.
I mean, so. it is we've seen this in politics, but also in life that like you can just create your own reality and just say what you want, and at least there'll be a segment of people that might listen to it, because Flores' allegations about the tampering led directly to them losing these picks. And how he phrased that it turned down the tanking, that they didn't find them guilty of that. I do want to kind of point out how that's misleading to say it that way. The investigation concluded they did not intentionally lose games. But it also concluded that many times the owner expressed that he prioritized their draft position versus win-loss record. And that was to their team president, it was to their GM, it was to Coach Flores, who at the time let people know that he was not okay with this in writing. That multiple times he said, look, the draft pick's more important than winning. He said that to the coach. They also confirmed that he said the $100,000 line to Flores about losing games, and they brush it off as a joke. Like,
that's where it says this feels a little neat. That's where it comes in. And maybe that is true.
And they confirmed that. Yeah. Like, that's in there, that he was prioritizing the draft
pick. Maybe the investigation turned over enough rocks where they felt that there really wasn't a serious offer to pay money for losses. Because the other stuff, let's just be honest, let's be grown-ups here, stuff happens all the time in the league now. And not just the NFL, all across professional sports.
I hear you, but like when you hear something from your boss, sometimes they don't need to exactly say what they want for you to make it clear what they want. And if you have an owner of a football team letting the coach know that winning is not our goal here this year, I think that is a problem. That's problematic. No. That is punishable.
Maybe it's a little more surfacey than in other organizations. But again, we're not privy to what's going on in other organizations like the Browns when they were in their tank, or any other number of teams you could point out. I also think it's important to bring up what Brian Flores had to say in his statement after this came out, because obviously he is a central figure in all of this. I am thankful that the NFL's investigator found my factual allegations against Stephen Ross are true. At the same time, I am disappointed to learn that the investigator minimized Mr. Ross's offers and pressure to tank games, especially when I wrote and submitted a letter at the time to Dolphins executives documenting my serious concerns regarding this subject at the time, which the investigator has in her possession. Then he goes on to add that Mr. Ross will avoid any meaningful consequence. And that's true, because the fine, listen, $1 million or whatever is a lot to anyone, but maybe not so much to oligarchs, as we're talking about. And also, his suspension, October 17th.
That doesn't
mean
anything.
We're going to blink and it's going to be October 17th.
It doesn't mean anything.
We just did a segment about October 4th, Mark. That's the end of week four. So week six, he's back. He's barred from league meetings and things of that nature for the season or the year or whatever. But otherwise, this is not something that's going to throw his ownership too far off course.
The more that we learn about this and the more that you dig into the investigation, I just don't think they went far enough. I think the tanking thing, you're right. They made it too neat, because when an owner, it doesn't have to even be put in writing, you're creating an environment. And that's what Stephen Ross did. He created an environment where it was very clear, I think, to people about what the tanking thing meant. Remember, we called it the fish tank, because there were multiple reports from the Miami Herald that talked about the fact that this was what the Dolphins were doing. And they're not the only team in that league. The Browns have done this. We can look at a team like the Bears that are moving pieces left and right for picks to rebuild, essentially. It's what you do in sports. You rebuild. The Dolphins did it more severely, and they were let off the hook on this one.
Well, that's a great point, Mark.
Totally agree.
I suppose it really was all right.
It really was.
It was also said with a lot of confidence, and I think that's what Justin was thinking.
Yeah, it was.
About.
Sure. It was coming. Yeah. It came across.
Sure.
I hear what Flores is saying, and that's why I'm torn on this. Because initially, my expectations are so low. I'm like, okay, a first and a third. That's a significant punishment that they did anything and really called them out. It is embarrassing. I think Stephen Ross has had a lot of bad moments as Dolphins owner, a lot of rough times, a lot of criticism coming his way. But like Dan Snyder, to be suspended, it certainly is embarrassing and is a black mark on your record. On the other hand, I totally agree with Brian Flores that ultimately, in the long run, it's not going to hurt Stephen Ross that much. It'll hurt his football team, certainly with the draft picks. you know, it was the same, you know, they took a first rounder away from the Patriots for Deflategate still, if you look back on that. They took a second and a third for Bountygate back in the day. So it's a little confusing to figure out when punishment is coming down. They could have gone even bigger on it. And I appreciated that Flores found the integrity of the game part of his complaints and lawsuit so important, because ultimately his lawsuit, in the order that he presented it, prioritized the racial component and what is happening in terms of firing and hiring black coaches in the league. And I think that's what he led with, and that was important. But he also wanted to take out his former boss's kneecaps with its tampering stuff and the Brady stuff. And he absolutely did that on the way out the building. He hurt his former boss in a very meaningful way. And that's why the way that he put out that lawsuit and the statements way back when this first started was very calculated and I think ultimately very effective.
Mm-hmm. Don't mess with Brian Flores. All right. That's that.
They should give that pick to the Pats, you know, maybe.
I don't
Pats
think so.
Pats and Bucks. Because I think these are two organizations that they haven't had enough success.
That's where your argument falls off.
You know, that's who they were messing with. They were messing with the Pats, you know.
I don't know, dude. You kicked Tom Brady out the door, so.
And nothing happens to Tom Brady or Sean Payton in this, by the way.
Do we put any? Yeah, this.
Right.
It's kind of sleeping on
bad.
A little
the
bit.
The Saints are the team that should also get a pick, I guess, yeah.
Another team that you adore. Tom Brady, the Tom Brady-ness of all this, which makes it even more fascinating story. Do we let him off the hook? I guess he's just a player. But he was potentially in the conversation. He was looking to get into the front office, or that was kind of the pitch. So if his potential down the line ownership or front office position begins with being involved in this nefarious malarkey, I guess I'm really excited, I have to say, for the Tom Brady ownership experience.
I mean, at least he didn't destroy a cell phone this time around.
Right. It'll be like the Derek Jeter, you know, ownership experience in Florida.
Well, we don't need to. We don't
or
need
the
to
Gloria
take shots
Stefan.
At the captain like that.
It's funny because Brady literally could have been trying to get to the Dolphins this offseason if Flores didn't drop this in the time that he did. If you look at the timing, that's sort of when he backed off the whole Dolphins idea. Wild.
All right. Let's move on. Let's get caught up with other NFL news. This went down on Monday. Deebo Samuel and the 49ers. All good. Everything's fine. The two sides have agreed on a 3-year contract extension worth up to $73.5 million with $58.1 million guaranteed. The Niners officially announced the extension after Rap Sheet reported it on Sunday. John Lynch said they are overjoyed to have Deebo Samuel, and they should be because he's that important to their offense. Once again, Mark, I feel like we're a little used. Like we were a part of this whole saga that was ultimately Samuel was never looking to go anywhere. He never really wanted to be traded. He just wanted his money, and he got it, and we helped it by making it a bigger story, by inflaming tension, just by talking about it and acting as if he could be traded on draft weekend and all that. You're shaking your head, Greg. Do you disagree?
There was a lot of malarkey going on with wide receivers.
I'm reading an article here where Michael Irvin, our colleague.
Friend.
I can see. Well, I've never spoken with him. He did come into the newsroom that one time.
We saw him at the draft like about 8-9 years ago in New York in the after-hours bar, and Mike was feeling no pain, belly up against the bar. Could not have been nicer to us than our friends.
And that happened this draft in Las Vegas, too, when there was an after-party.
Yes.
And I went up, and actually, he didn't intend this, but there was a group of three of us talking, and Michael Irvin was telling a very animated story, and in a fatherly fashion, put his hand on my shoulder
at one point.
To make. So I do think that I have a real friendship with him to some degree.
Imagine.
Fatherly.
You guys are
pretty close in age.
I know, but he's also like, he's a gigantic human being.
And also with Irvin, and I, the same, we were all in that post-draft in Vegas in that same bar area, and it was in there was like a hallway with where the casino was, and he's Michael Irvin, you know, everyone's looking at him. And it is interesting, and I give credit to Mike, our friend, that he's still like that same gregarious, fun dude when he lives his entire life in a fishbowl. Anyway, we're off.
I think he lives his truth in a way, and he is who he is in a way that we should all aspire to.
Should we try to get him on the show?
I mean, yeah,
we probably literally are our colleagues.
Why try? He would say yes in a second.
Graver. Why isn't Michael Irvin on the show?
All right, long term, short term goal here. Let's get Irvin on.
You Graver. Got it. That draft party was so fun that you guys were at while I was in the hotel room editing the podcast. Loved it.
Grinder.
You're not there yet, Justin. One day you can you could push that off on someone. And watch out, by the way. Sean Kelly stepped up in a big spot for our Deshaun Watson emergency podcast. Didn't skip a beat. So let's keep our eye on the prize, I guess is what I'm saying.
I'm proud of Sean. I'm glad he did a good job.
He did an excellent job communicating before and after the show.
Your regular Baker Mayfield, like, loudly cheering on long completions by Sam Darnold right now. Michael Irvin was on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. And he said he really wanted to be moved. He spoke to him at the time. He was emotional. He wanted to get out of there. I do think that that was the difference between his situation and every other wide receiver this offseason, is that at that time he was truly upset. And that's why I give John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan some credit. Never make this thing public. They didn't say a word about all this other than just that they love Debo Samuel and they want to work it out. They were not interested. And you're right, Dan. I don't think a trade was ever going to happen because they want Debo Samuel so much. They just let it come down.
Like,
and then they gave out the money. And the fact that this AJ Brown and McLaurin and DK, they all basically signed the exact same contract.
Right.
There's little differences here in there, and I want to get into one of them with Debo, but that made it easier, and they played it perfectly.
I'd also note that the contract does not have language, according to Kyle Shanahan, about his role, which was a big sticking point.
It depends. They have an incentive. You can make, if you're Debo Samuel, an extra, I think it was $600,000+ if he gets 380 yards rushing. Now, that's an incentive.
But it doesn't prohibit, though. That was one concern.
Right.
So that's a good win for the Niners.
Right. It gives him an incentive to do it. It says that he was on board with that. And he gets another $100,000+ on top of that if he has 3 rushing touchdowns. So it's sort of in the mix that, like, hey, we're not going to totally back
that
off.
That would probably be, what do I know, but unprecedented if in the contract it says you can't use him in certain ways in terms of strategy, you know, on the field, right? I don't know if that exists. But
he also needs to watch 4 hours of film per week, according to the
I guess, I guess my point is, like, that you say that the 49ers handled it really well, and we all thought, like, the Cardinals and the agent for Kyler Murray didn't handle it so well. But at the end of the day, like, money talks.
Right.
And we're just along for the ride.
Right. But in some cases, and A.J. Brown pointed this out on Twitter, like, the organization doesn't want to pay the money. And I think he rightly, to all the Titans fans or anyone else that was trying to put any blame on him, was like, look, we all got the same contract.
All right.
The Eagles were ready to pay it. The Titans didn't want to pay it. They're the ones that got rid of me.
How about this? In the future, because we're always looking to be, how can we be a better, smarter podcast? Next offseason, should we be targeting the types of players that are maybe below that Debo Samuel, Kyler Murray line, you know, and we're like, all right, this one is worth kind of tracking more closely because the team might be making a football related decision. But when it's a superstar player, and that's what Debo Samuel is, you know what I'm saying, right?
I don't think that we did a terrible job with this one. Brown
did get moved, and that was surprising. You know what I mean?
True.
So it's like 1 out of 4. We do this a lot, though. I feel like at the end of every offseason, we always are like, well, we're not going to get caught in whatever's happening next offseason. Then you get back to next offseason. You know, you get to February, and it's like, oh, shoot, we have 3 hours of content to fill.
Right.
Like, what
Hypocrites,
are we going to talk about?
Idiots.
Really?
What are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about football stories.
Nothing will change. We'll dig right in again on this similar topic a year from now.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Bad news for the Cowboys. James Washington, who was one of the guys that was supposed to step in for that suddenly thin wide receiver group, he's been diagnosed with a broken foot. He's out for 6 to 10 weeks, and I don't need to tell you that a foot injury for a wide receiver, you don't know when he comes back, if he'll be the same guy, and it might be next July. Man, I never felt myself, but now I'm better than ever. Also, Van Jefferson, the Rams wide receiver, another important piece in a wide receiver room. This for the defending champs. He'll undergo knee surgery this week. He's uncertain for week one. Also, Broncos wide receiver Tim Patrick carted off with an apparent knee injury at practice today. This happened. So hopefully that's not too serious. He seemed to be a guy, Greg, who could step up in that offense with Russell Wilson and take the next step in his career.
Yeah, he was maybe their best receiver last year.
Making the leap candidate even.
Absolutely. And hit where he wins matches up well with where Russell Wilson wins, you know, deep and on the outside, certainly. But I think, you know, putting these three stories together, and this is why, you know, Dan's the host with the host here.
Oh, well, that's very nice. Yeah.
It's like it presents a contrast. Two of these teams have incredible wide receiver depth here. It's like the Rams, yeah, that third receiver slot looks pretty grisly, a lot of questions here now, but they still have Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson. The Broncos still have Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton and Hamler, and they're good. Whereas the Cowboys have Michael Gallup coming off a torn ACL, might not be ready for the start of the season. I never was that high on James Washington to begin with.
Right.
I feel like if you can't succeed in Pittsburgh, I know Ben was there, but like that, usually receivers find a way to succeed there, and he really didn't. You have Gallup coming off the injury. You have CeeDee Lamb, but man, you really don't have anything else at wideout but beyond that.
I think it makes the Amari Cooper trade, which was, you know, at the outset when it happened, they got very little for Amari Cooper. That just looks worse for the Cowboys right now. There's no depth there.
You're probably right.
Jalen Tolbert, their rookie, is a third-round pick. Cowboys are going to say, look, he's stepping right in. Okay, like, that'd be great. He's a third-round pick who's supposed to play mostly in the slot, and I hope he's great. But if you're counting on a third-round pick before ever seeing him as your, like, hard number two to start the year, that's a problem.
And also with Amari Cooper, because now it looks especially bad. But if for whatever reason they weren't really into the Amari Cooper experience anymore, all right, go ahead, trade him away. But then the mistake is you don't really – you're not aggressively looking for someone you could count on to slide in. Count on like someone like – I have an announcement to make because I'm so sick of this.
Wait.
I have an announcement to make.
Okay.
All right.
The Cowboys. I have an announcement, Graver. Have to sign Will Fuller.
And I
The announcement is I am now Will Fuller's agent. He is not aware of this, but I am actively now representing Will Fuller because whoever his agent is not doing the job. He is a perfect flyer guy, if he's healthy and of right mind, to slide into Dallas with that quarterback and that offense and make a split.
There is reporting out there that a number of teams are into Will Fuller, but waiting a little bit to pick him up.
Don't wait, because then somebody else picks him up.
He's and being monitored. According
what does that even mean? I saw that too.
That's his agent feeling the heat from Hanzus.
His former agent.
Right. He's feeling the heat from Hanzus. Like, I got to get something out there. He calls up Aaron
Monitoring.
Wilson, my former colleague at Pro Football Talk.
There you go.
Now Pro Football Network. Saying, okay, that makes sense, but I'm going to top you here. They got $20 million in cap space. Uh-huh. They got more than, I think, every team in the league other than the Browns. Odell Beckham, Dallas Cowboy, it just makes too much sense.
GC, good
someone
call.
Should, like, whatever the going rate for OBJ is, just overspend and make it a 3-year deal and see what happens.
How about this?
Well, Sean McVay mentioned Odell Beckham again.
Right.
After the Rams he's not going to be available till November.
I get it. The Rams are confident that they're going to be able to bring him back, but money talks. If the Cowboys are like, "Hey, come rehab with us. We know you won't be back till October or November."
That toys with the Odell Beckham painting on the wall here where he's now in a Rams uniform.
And the 2-hour time limit the man has to
right,
paint.
The painter.
Cam Akers stole Odell's number. Cam Akers changed his number to number 3. So if Odell does come back to the Rams, he has to switch numbers.
Oh,
now.
Super awkward.
I love it.
Behind CD Lamb right now, Noah Brown, Jalen Tolbert, Simi Fehako. How about we sign both? How about we bring Odell and Will Fuller in?
Now, as Will Fuller's agent.
Yes. That's me, Will Fuller's agent.
Like, is he in the right place mentally and physically? Because, you know, there was some high hope. He did get paid, I believe, about $11 million from the Dolphins last year. And between injuries, there was been suspension problems.
Yes.
He hasn't necessarily been available.
Okay, two things you need to know. He's in the best shape of his life, one. Two, last year was humbling for him, but mentally he feels that was a clear-the-decks type year, and he feels like he's never been more passionate about the sport and wanting to make an impact while he still can in his prime.
You're a natural in this role.
Sold. Where do I sign? Where
do I sign? All right, real quick, before we go to break, let's hit a couple more things. Orlando Brown, the tackle for the Chiefs, will report to training camp.
He's there now, as
Kansas
of
City,
today.
He's there. He was upset about playing under the franchise tag. He wants that huge new contract. Mark is telling him how much he should make. Mark says, take the $190 million or $90 million, whatever it was. And I'm saying, go get your worth, Orlando Brown. Again, I'm an agent, so I'm coming from the player deserves what he's worth.
We should get Orlando on, maybe in person for them to talk.
I will back off that because what Orlando Brown specified while after returning to Kansas City was there weren't enough guarantees in that contract for him. So that's why he turned it down.
Orlando Brown is listed at 6'8 and 344 pounds. So I think that would be a good conversation in person for you and him to have.
Absolutely. And
sounds perilous.
Finally, Ryan Kerrigan. Happy trails. We saw him at the NFL Talent Summit being upstaged, you could say, by Gerald McCoy. But seemed like a very nice man and well put together, well spoken. I could see him having a career in media. Maybe we'll cross paths. Maybe in this building.
I think that's what he was going for by being at that summit.
Right. You know what? I kind of conflated memories, and for some reason, I thought he was like a fifth wheel on the Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling discussion, but he wasn't. Was he? He was somehow separate than that.
Yes, at the summit last month in Santa Monica, he was on the "Hey players, let's get real." Dais.
Him and Gerald McCoy, and they were essentially telling
Players us in the media
what it was like to be a player and deal with
the media.
Well,
maybe he didn't like it because he's been showing up at Commanders practices, and they say in an unofficial capacity, he's kind of checking out whether he wants to become a coach potentially, but he's not ready to say whether
wonder where he comes down.
95 and a half sacks, but I mean, that's quite a
great
career.
I looked him up.
Consistently productive.
As
on that
he
front.
Was on the stage, I looked him up. I said, wow, that's a nice career for the former 16th overall
four
pick.
Four Pro Bowls. I've seen people try to make Hall of Fame cases around pass rushers with similar-ish profile. I don't think Ryan Kerrigan will get any Hall of Fame pop, and I wouldn't personally put him in that category. But like 95 sacks, four Pro Bowls, like sometimes those guys, they get thrown in the mix.
You wonder, Mark, given his ties to the Commanders, what he feels about a certain five-sided government building in D.C. A
lot of Commanders in Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon.
I would imagine
clashes with your beliefs.
I think it's fair to have a suspicion about what goes on in the Pentagon.
It's one of my favorite training camp battles this year. Sessler v. Pentagon. It's like, who comes out on top?
Why is that such a bizarre thing in the whole thing, too?
All right, that's fair enough. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back with Whispers.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
All right, here we go. Now, we were given Greg a hard out, 33 minutes for Mark, so we need to finish this show in that window.
I don't treat his heart out as my heart out. Like, if that's how the show flows, great. And Mark can make the decision whether to leave or not at that moment.
Talk until sunset if you
I found in the past, sometimes he'll say a heart out, but he'll still just.
Been a big time week on the podcast, and you were giving it to me a little bit early in the week about Hansa's time, and then sometimes I show up a couple minutes late. What about the other side, Mark, with the hard out stuff? That's a different type of thing.
Well, I yesterday specified that I would like to begin at 11 a.m.
Absolutely.
But you're a big hard out guy.
And then we did not start until 12:10.
Especially as your career becomes more and more established, I feel like you're getting more and more vociferous with the hard outs.
As the season goes on, often the hard outs become harder. I feel like I do.
This is fiction.
I do know as lately. Like, look.
Add that to the AI draw.
We're big business now. We sign these deals. We got a lot going on. We're trying to plan out the season. Sometimes we got to have these meetings after the show. And I have learned it's sometimes perilous to try to have an after show meeting with Mark and be like, okay, let's talk about that thing. It's like, oh wait, where's Mark? Where'd he go?
Cartoon. Ding.
The listener has dust. No concept of how fictional this all is. This
it's
is
just
not
like a
accurate.
Little fictional. I would say it's just a little.
It's a lot.
Where's Mark? All right, we love you, buddy.
Daddy, I love the both of you.
You know it's love. You know
it
it's
is love.
We don't want you.
It is love.
We know our time is finite with you, and we like to draw it out as much as we can because we know once you're gone, you're gone.
I always return.
All right, let's
hey, Mark. How about some whispers?
All right, let's get into it.
Get me out of here.
Let's get into it. Whispers from training camp. Mark, why don't you start us, buddy?
I'll go to Pittsburgh.
That's been the most fun one.
Whispers.
Ooh.
I think it was me who said a couple of weeks ago that I found the whole...
Who said this podcast doesn't have sex appeal? Did you hear that?
That was...
All three of us at the same time?
That was nice. It was alluring.
That was raw.
I was mentioning that I just thought the whole Mitch Trubisky thing was a tough sell on the fan base, that why not Kenny Pickett, your draft pick, your rookie, just start him now and get him in there. But he has really, according to Mark Caboli of The Athletic, really struggled in camp. Noticeably, this is what he wrote. The Steelers' first-round pick has been erratic and inconsistent throwing the ball, as he has been saddled with all third-team reps throughout the ramp-up period. I get that. That's a little bit of a different thing. It has some believing it will be impossible for him to grow quickly enough to be a week one starter in Cincinnati, especially if Mitch Trubisky keeps progressing and Mason Rudolph continues to shine. It's been Mason Rudolph that a lot of players have gone out of their way to totally praise, and he was completely an afterthought in this race. So at this point, my stance on Kenny Pickett is changing. I realize it's camp practices and stuff, but in another universe, he's shining from the neck up. He's in total command of it. His throws look perfect, and that's not the case at this point.
It's a good nug. It's a good way to start. I also caution to get too caught up. We just turned the calendar over to August. He's figuring out how to play at this level. I know he knows where all the bathrooms are in the facility, but otherwise he is a rookie, and he's probably swimming a little bit. Let's see what he's like in 3 weeks. Let's see when the preseason comes around. But it's starting to trend that direction with Trubisky, which I will raise my hand and say I didn't think this is how it was going to play out, and maybe it is.
Pickett's going to have a chance to play a lot in the preseason, but going back to OTAs and mini camps, this has been the consistent drumbeat that just he is a step behind. and the Rudolph appreciation has been there as well. And he's he's been there the longest. I don't think Mason Rudolph has virtually any chance to start week one, but I would absolutely take the over on 1.5 Mason Rudolph starts for this season. And I just have to think it's worth pointing out Mason Rudolph's start last year against the Browns was a totally respectable, normal, like good backup-ish start. That's all I'm saying. Like he was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess for me, I'm not caught up, like you guys aren't caught up in the idea of Trubisky exploding and finding his first round status in terms of ability. But Mason Rudolph is below that line even. Like, I'd rather see Trubisky in a new offense with a shot to lead a team in week one than Mason Rudolph, who I think we know who he is. It's kind of similar to your
friends
in
Seattle.
I can
already hear people coming at me being like, he literally averaged 4.7 yards per attempt last year. But you got to watch that horrible Lions game. It was in crazy weather, and
when you go look at Pro Football Reference after this season and you go to the Steelers 2022 page, it's going to have three different starting quarterbacks who have started multiple games.
I agree. Well, before just moving off Pittsburgh, just because I find them really interesting, there's been a lot of hype about Calvin Austin and their other rookie, George Pickens, who was my favorite receiver maybe on tape in this entire class. And they're two people that Caboli and other writers are saying have not taken long to adapt and I think could have a pretty big role this season. Austin is more of, you know, the slot guy who catches 30, 40 balls, but Pickens is a really interesting rookie receiver to watch.
All right, Greg, how about you? Give us a whisper.
All right. I want to start. I have so many. You know, you were like, what are we going to get in? What are we not going to get in? I want to go positive. Let's go Travis Etienne hype. Emphasis on the E. We didn't get to see him last year.
Was it an Achilles or a Liz Frank?
Great question. I think it was a foot injury last year for Etienne.
Digger.
John Shipley, who's really good covering this team for SI.com Jaguar Report, has said he thinks he's the standout from day one. These are great daily reports that he's given. I like the teams that have a reliable daily guy. And Etienne, to his mind, looks like maybe the most explosive best player on that offense so far, that maybe the receivers haven't stepped up quite as much. Trevor Lawrence looks like he's definitely taking a step forward. But Etienne's the guy that we really haven't seen as a pro that I'm excited to see. Not in the Hall of Fame game. The Jaguars are playing Thursday night. They're not going to put him out there for that. I would expect he'd get some preseason snaps. We won't see him early, but he could absolutely have a monster role for them.
There are whispers that he'll be used in an Alvin Kamara type way, a Debo type way potentially, and I think he's got a much better offensive coaching staff this time around than last year.
Who's the Jughead, the coach last year?
Urban Meyer.
I could totally see him making some comment in the media, like, I didn't have a chance to, coach Travis Etienne when he's blown up in October. I think
you had enough chances, Urban Meyer,
yeah,
to do
exactly.
all sorts of things.
I think that's a great call. And like we just talked about recently, one of the great Chris Wessling statements that he made was, watch out for guys that pop in the summer and in training camp and in preseason at running back, because that's usually a sign that these guys are ready to do damage. So maybe after a wipeout rookie season. What was it?
It was the harlot Liz Frank.
And like, I'm not saying we're all bad.
Scorpion woman.
Like the writers aren't bad at being scouts. I'm not just saying that, like, maybe we are, but it does feel like running back is an easier one where it's like you know it when you see it.
You can see their conditioning.
You can see their
lateral explosion.
Right. You can see how they're moving. Tyson Campbell, their second year cornerback, getting a lot of hype there too, and he finished last year really strong. So that draft class that Urban had, yeah, might end up working out for Peterson.
What a legacy!
He'll let everyone know exactly. All right, well, let's stay optimistic. I like that. How about some Z-Man optimism? Who's the longtime Don Pardo of Saturday Night Live? Steven Seagal. Peter King, the great Peter King of NBC Sports, he had two dispatches, well, many, but among them that Wandell Robinson, their second-round pick out of Kentucky, has been, quote, the star of the Giants' offense throughout training camp. They love the way he's looked and how explosive he's been and how he's been. They've been using him all over the field and how that could absolutely open up a Giants offense under Brian Daboll that could use a little juice. He also, King, reported that Saquon Barkley, take this with a grain of salt if you wish, but I'm just letting you know that Saquon Barkley, quote, looks very good early in camp. Health-wise, has answered every bell and has had a solid offseason. And you wonder if with a better offensive line and a better coaching staff, whether Barkley can, I don't know if he ever gets back to that guy fresh out of Penn State, but can be a true RB1. And the most important part of all this, Daniel Jones, I will tell you the reporting out of Giants camp just today, this morning. This from Jordan, I always get this one, Ronan. Here's the quote. Daniel Jones absolutely tearing it up today at Giants camp. Connor Hughes, who recently moved from the Jets beat to a hybrid New York beat, also reported, I had Daniel Jones 14 of 16 today with two touchdown passes and a pick. And I don't know what else to tell you other than watch out a little bit, just a little bit. Keep your eye on the Giants in the NFC East. I know the Eagles are hype bunnies, and I know the Cowboys are the defending champions, but with better coaching.
That's a big step from, like, just watch out for them as a fun team and watch out for them winning
the
division.
They will be more. I want to add a little
nugget. But maybe a fun team in the NFC East is a team that could be in the race in December.
I want to add a little nugget to that because if you look at what happened to Kadarius Toney this offseason, and there's moments from last year where it was like, I have a good feeling this guy is going to make a big difference if he sticks with the Giants. They were going to trade him. They decided not to do that. When they drafted Wandale Robinson, they have a very similar skill set. Instead of, you know, that washing away Tony's role, like, he's completely healed his relationship with Brian Daboll. They're now, like, playing Kadarius Toney. He's a rapper. Like, they're playing his songs during warm-ups and stuff.
Oh, I like that.
And Kadarius Toney, because he was a bit of a head case last year.
You think Joe Judge was doing that? I don't think so.
No, exactly. He said that he appreciated that from the coach because it showed a willingness to build a relationship with me. And Daboll's turned around and said, I think he's a very loyal guy about Toney, that he's been a tremendous skill set. They are using Wandale Robinson and Toney. They start practice with them taking handoffs with the running backs. They're using them out of the backfield of a ton, and they're going to both be on the field at the same time. And I'm with you. I think the Giants are slightly spicy.
There's a backfire potential, though, when you play one of the guys on the team's rap. Like, you know, some of these guys, that all professional athletes or a lot, tend to want to be rappers, and all rappers want to be professional athletes. That's been going on forever. But you wonder if it's bad, and then Leonard Williams doesn't know it's Wandell, and he's wow, this is terrible.
I think Toney is making it very clear that it's his song.
Yeah, let's make it clear. Yeah. Hey, guys, this is the Kentucky kid's, like, fledgling rap career.
No, it's Toney's.
It's Toney's, but
oh,
yes.
Oh, it's Toney's. Oh, it's Kadarius.
To your point, like, we were thinking it's like, Wandell Robinson.
Let's just make sure it's very clear.
Daboll has also mentioned that, you know, he's been honest. He's like, I like some of his songs better than others.
Like, he's a top 10 football insider.
The Wandale pick was not popular, but if you were going to pick a coach that would know how to use a guy at his size, Wandale Robinson, well, I think it would be Brian Daboll. And maybe it's just like an Isaiah McKenzie in Buffalo role for him. To me, they're not that similar. I mean, Toney's at least 15 pounds bigger. Can win on the outside a little more, is one of my favorite Making the Leap candidates. And, they have that opening game in Tennessee. All right. And then you get the Panthers week two before a Monday nighter against the Cowboys, or maybe it's a Sunday night. It's a prime. Okay. Show me something, Giants early. Be that team that Dan was talking about gets out fast and gets everyone too excited. I would like that.
How about it's mid-December and the Eagles and Cowboys are 8-6 battling it out for the NFC's title, but they're the Giants quietly 7-7 right behind them.
But if I had to pick a new team, the Giants might be it because that's the team that we grew up watching.
And yeah, that's your neck of the woods. Really, in Connecticut, when we were there, and I grew up only 15 minutes from Connecticut, you were a different part. But the part of Connecticut you were was, I would guess, Giants were the most popular.
We'd never get the Patriots. Right? You'd get the Jets.
Full
and
circle.
Giants.
Yep. Full circle. But there's no Lawrence Taylor and Bill Sims and Joe Morris and Leonard Marshall there anymore. But maybe this new crop of players will all gel this year.
I mean, Joe Morris is like 52 years old at this point, so.
Right. Joe Morris ain't walking through those doors. How about another whisper?
All right. How about we go to, you want me to do one?
Yeah, then we all went, right?
I think that I'll go to San Francisco. Trey Lance has had a slow start, according to reports.
I have Trey Lance fatigue, by the way.
Up and down. It's not the same thing as...
Anybody else have Lance fatigue?
No, it's August 2nd, bro.
I don't. I think this is interesting, but it's a good thing about the Niners, because the reason this is happening, they talked about the fact that he was on the field with Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Elijah Mitchell, Trent Williams, Mike McGlinchey. They were all out there, and they were struggling. And it wasn't just because it's Trey Lance. It's because their defense has been on fire during training camp. And NFL Network was there today, and they said the same thing, that they view themselves as, we're good with the Trey Lance thing, but what we really see ourselves as is a team that centers around defense this season. They're a top five unit, and they have been dominating camp early, which happens.
Defense is ahead of the offense
That's
right now.
That's always
the case. In general, right, yes, but I think that sort of raises my biggest concern about the 49ers, which is their offensive line. And right now, Trent Williams is coming off of an injury, but they're potentially, you know, starting Jake Brendel at center. They have a rookie, Buford, that they've been giving looks with the first team at guard. Aaron Banks is another guy there. Brunskill, like, on paper, it could be problematic. And then you have to go up against one of the best defensive lines in the league every day in practice. It's not too surprising to me that they're getting worked, even though the 49ers are short a couple linemen now. They lost Maurice Hurst, who had a good chance, was going to make their team for the entire season, and their best defensive tackle, Eric Armstead's out a couple weeks. But that always, like, gets you worried, like, when one side of the ball for your team is just dominating the other. Like, do you want to spin positive, or is it because their offensive line stinks?
Yeah,
it's positive and negative.
I don't know if it was Sauce Gardner or maybe it was DJ Moore had a pick six of Zach Wilson. And I was like, yeah, oh, yeah.
It's tough.
Okay.
People giving Ayuk a lot of love, though. I'm definitely feeling like the Ayuk bounce back hype year, because his numbers actually in the last 8 games of the year, he had more receiving yards than Debo Samuel. He was a top 15 in the NFL receiver in the last 8 games of the year. That could be a nasty...
He escaped the Shanahan doghouse during last season.
Right, then a nasty 1-2 punch, because he, to me, is like a special guy after the catch.
I meant DJ Reed, not DJ Moore.
Oh.
Greg.
DJ Reed. Thought that was a nice little signing there.
Whisper. It's a good roster.
All right, I went positive initially. We got to mention our friend Carson Wentz over there in Washington, because I think he's got the right idea, that he's trying to take command.
As we all know, decided to really go ahead and start to take command.
The best part of that is that because the way we need to set that up, that also gives our producer plenty of time to dig up the drop. So
I read their daily practice report every day, and like early in camp, the one thing you don't see across the league is just like, well, he missed a lot of receivers before there was tackling, before there was pads. And Washington's now added the pads to the mix. But essentially every day, they're just talking about that Carson Wentz is not accurate, that he misses a ton of throws against air, which has been his problem to begin with. And if you're not getting that first training camp with the team sort of preseason hype, I'm not going to overreact. Obviously, what Wentz has done on the field in regular season play is more important. But he just doesn't shoot straight. And, like, if that's happening when you're going against air, it's definitely going to happen when you're under pressure.
Yeah, there was also around the erstwhile Washington football team. Well, I guess they still are the Washington football team. Curtis Samuel. There is, quote, some concern from Ron Rivera about his conditioning, and he's also been dealing with some hamstring and lower back tightness. This comes after the groin injury ruined his first season with Washington. It also kind of reminds you, so that's not ruling out Curtis Samuel as being a big-time player for them, but remember the hype around Curtis Samuel going into free agency last year. They need him to help make Carson Wentz better, because Carson Wentz, we know what we have here. He's a little scattershot. He can get hot. But he goes through cold streaks. His leadership can be questioned fairly. He is who he is.
I mean, Samuel, $34.5 million contract, played 84 offensive snaps, and now there's some concern over his conditioning. I don't like that at all.
Got paid, though.
Whispers.
Greg, I was just pulling up your roster projected. Why did roster reset? Did it used to be called roster reset, and then it became projected starters?
No, they're two separate
different franchises.
Active, both active.
Projected
still?
Starters, very active. Yes. I believe roster reset is still done by the news desk.
I was looking at the Colts depth chart and what their starters look like, because there's been so much optimism around Matt Ryan and what he brings to that offense as Carson Wentz's replacement. That's just an accidental great transition. Not taking credit for it.
It's
a Dan Hansis shout-out. Right.
Paul Rudd says it's cool. We love Jonathan Taylor. We love Michael Pittman's ability. Paris Campbell's a big part of this, though. They kind of need another guy to step up unless you're a huge Mo Alley Cox fan. And according to Colts.com's J.J. Stankovic, yes. There was a Yank. There was an all glove, no feel, no bat shortstop during the dark Yankee days of the early 90s named Andy Stankiewicz.
I remember that
guy.
He
was a fan favorite. Could not play, but a memorable name. J.J. Stankovic reports that Paris Campbell and Matt Ryan have shown a strong connection during the early days of Colts training camp. We shall see if that carries over. That would be my one question about this whole Matt Ryan renaissance that people in the Midwest, obviously, especially, are getting pumped up about. Does he have enough around him to be a difference maker as a passer of the football? We know he'll be able to hand it off to the great running back. Paris Campbell, a big piece of this.
Bob Kravitz of The Athletic added to the Matt Ryan hype and the Paris Campbell hype, saying that basically Campbell is impressed nonstop. He looks as quick as and explosive as he did before all the health issues, so
he's
that's positive.
Healthy.
With Matt Ryan, they said that the offense has been moving at warp speed, and I took this from Frank Reich as a slapdown of Carson Wentz to some degree. He said, we had the same number of plays we had in the past, but we actually finished 10 minutes earlier both days, Wednesday and Thursday, and that's because of the quarterback. That's because the quarterback is pushing the tempo.
Right. Mark loves Matt Ryan. Like, they're two birds of a feather. You know?
Do
like,
I?
I'm just saying. Like,
I'm just saying that it's been nonstop verbal
hype about
Matt
Ryan. He's, like, got a heart out. He is the quarterback. Right. Mark would want.
I thought you meant because they're both intense whites.
Well, they are.
You're saying that the quick tempo nature.
I'm saying, like, Matt Ryan gets everyone done with work faster. Like, that's your kind of guy.
Do you not take that a little bit as, like, the last guy, Carson Wentz, not only physically did he have issues.
Oh, no,
but, like,
you're right.
Neck up, we had problems.
No, you got it. Nailed. I think they are absolutely thrilled. They've soured on Carson Wentz to the point where by the same day of the final game of the season, they were like, we are done with this dude. The owner literally summoned everyone back to the team facility that night after a road game in Florida and said, hey, we're firing the quarterback, and you're next if this doesn't get better. So, yeah, I think they were ready for the fresh start.
Paris Campbell reminds me of Wes.
Wes loved Paris Campbell that first year.
And that's the thing is this is Paris Campbell's season, and I've heard an interview with him, or I read an interview with him, and you just hope for the best for a guy like that, because you know the mental struggles that a player goes through when he's injured and out the whole season. This has happened three straight years for him, where he's sort of – usually he flashes in August, and you're just, like, crossing your fingers that it can
don't
continue.
Put that juju on him, dude.
What do you mean? I'm trying to put the opposite
juju.
You put it on
him, but you put it in the air.
It's the context of everything about him, and he knows it. And he's like, he's talking about you got to. He was saying how you really appreciate the days you're out there now because of everything he's been through. But yeah, it would be an amazing story, and they could use him to be a big time threat.
All right,
I ended on a positive.
That was good. I also like number one wide receivers. Just looks good.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm looking at his game log last year.
I think he only has 300 career yards because he just hasn't been able to play.
Yeah.
I think he's played two or three games every year, one or two.
He had one catch for 51 yards and a touchdown in week six last year and then disappeared.
Remember that play, yeah.
Must have got hurt that game.
That was
anyway.
A bomb from Wentz. Wentz had some nice throws.
All right, you want to go one more time around?
Ooh, that's
sure.
It. Sure. Right. I like when.
What do you mean? That's it. We got 9 minutes until the deadline.
I'll just be quick about the with one, and maybe we can get around more. I like when players pop up you've literally never heard of before. And Lamar Jackson's been talking up Isaiah Likely, their rookie tight end, calling him Little Mark.
Unlikely.
He said that in an interview with our guy Claybon on NFL Network. Nice get for Claybon there. And so that's a rookie tight end. They're going to be playing a lot more two tight end sets. Calling him Little Mark for Mark Andrews is high praise. So that's like someone I'm watching in the preseason, Isaiah Likely. Never heard of him practically before.
Good one. What do you got, Mark?
Zion Johnson, Chargers camp, their first round guard, who is a big part of that line. He's next to Storm Johnson, who has been problematic. Corey Linsley basically said that he's lived up to the bill right now. It's the first day in pads, but everything we thought he is. He's been a really good player. The writers, Daniel Popper of The Athletic, has been raving about him too. That it's kind of the way that you felt when you watched Rashawn Slater's first reps, that you just knew he was that guy.
That's
so if this checks out and it sounds good, that's big for Justin Herbert, big for that offense.
All sorts of adoration around Allen Robinson at Rams camp. And the more I think about it, with Cooper Kupp there, with maybe Odell Beckham, but with Cooper Kupp there.
And Higbee's there still.
Coming off the Triple Crown season, Kupp, Allen Robinson just signed a new deal, healthy, motivated to show he's still a dude. Doesn't it feel possible that Allen Robinson, this is more a prediction than anything, is going to be a dog this year in that offense with that quarterback?
Yes. Totally agree.
He might be your value guy. Well, we got our hand up. What do you got, Gravedigger?
I was at Rams.
Gravedigger.
Yes. Do you want me to for you, do then. That?
Or? Yeah, you know that. You by now.
Gravedigger.
You want to have a tape.
It's a little tardy, actually.
Yeah. We were out at Rams training camp yesterday for Benched with Bonetta podcast,
right.
And Allen Robinson showed out. I mean, he had three or four catches that had the crowd going crazy. I feel like a big season is in store for this guy.
How about this? Why don't we head to Rams camp in a couple days and see for ourselves?
That's a
good concept.
That's a really good idea.
I would love
it
for Robinson.
Friday.
An underrated player throughout his career, coming off a bad year.
Can we get Allen Robinson on the show?
I will request it.
Let's talk to Allen Robinson about his incoming monster All-Pro season.
Did you steal guests away from us?
I don't think it necessarily works like that, but...
Well, it's worked that way in the past.
Possibly. I will say possibly.
Yikes. Also, if you're watching this on
YouTube...
Sounds
like something to talk about
after
the show.
Why is Sean Kelly, every time I look at him, he's closer and closer to you?
he's waiting
you're
for the
camera. You're actually shoulder to shoulder. Is it just so he can be on camera again?
He loves the camera.
There's Christy Stapleton
wearing a around the NFL T-shirt,
repping the brand.
Get those in, on our. Oh wait, you can't get them. Though we could probably.
At no point will this company ever say, maybe
go,
we
NFL.
Can leverage that incredibly loyal listenership into some merch. No,
who would want that?
Zero licensing rights for us.
Who would want that?
Anyway.
Oh, wait, you're up.
No, I just did. Allen Robinson's going to be a
right.
stud, and we're going to see him at Rams camp. One more quick one. Here we go. It's not your turn.
Just one.
Mark.
I'm going
No, you're right. No, it's Mark.
DeAndre
Mark's
Swift. Right. Every time I read about him, people are glowing. The report says he operates at a different speed from anyone else around him. And during camp this week, he pulled away from the defense on a few big runs Saturday. Jamal Williams as well. They want to run the ball. They got a great offensive line. I think it's a big year for DeAndre Swift.
I like that.
We've segged into predictions. I like
Whisper.
It. You got a prediction?
No. I'm going to give a rapid fire whispers. So far, Ikonwu is about that second team life in Carolina. Just something to keep an eye on.
Okay.
We always just pencil in these top 10 picks like they're going to be game changers right away. And
always.
It makes sense. He's behind Brady Christensen. You bring a guy along slowly, but he might be a little
Where
raw.
Did you have him on the projected starter series?
As a starter,
certainly.
So,
yikes.
You got a lot of time, but something to watch.
Exposed.
Romeo Dubs getting it done in Packer land. If you're going to be a rookie receiver with Aaron Rodgers, what a name, Romeo Dubs. Maybe he's ahead of Christian Watson early. And then I'm buying a little Dolphins offensive line hype. Austin Jackson is suddenly in super good condition, which has not always been the case. And then Connor Williams, they're playing at center, which is surprising. And I just think that's sort of the one thing on their team that can really improve the most. And on paper, I think Mike McDaniel can get it done.
Good
that's
ones.
More of a prediction. But there was some news in there. Connor Williams from the Cowboys at center was quite a surprise.
This shows you how fast things go in the NFL. The 21st overall pick of the 2020 draft is Jalen Reagor. Nick Sirianni, the Eagles coach, said he's battling for a roster spot in camp. What happens with some of these guys, the wide receivers that are taken high? If they don't pop, if they don't flash, if they don't have a role, and they don't play special teams, all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh, what are we going to do with you?
And you trade for A.J. Brown, absolutely.
Right. Like what are we going to do with
you? The Eagles did what the Cowboys did not do this offseason at wide receiver.
Ian reported, our guy Rapsy reported, that second-round pick, Tevin Jenkins, another guy everyone was just like, slot him right in. He's going to be their left tackle and prove them right away. Second-round pick from last year, Dan, is on the trade block. And I would guess they're going to give him up for almost nothing. They're basically giving up on him after only one season with the team.
And finally, I feel like this is a good way to close from one of our friends at The Athletic, Michael Sean Dugar.
Oh, yeah.
That's MSD.
Great reporter.
Whisper.
And now, another edition of Sipping on Vino, Checking on Gino.
Listen, man. Geno Smith, this is going to happen. This is happening. Unless Jimmy G parachutes in and somehow is ready to roll, Geno Smith is going to win this job, it looks like. He's running with the first-team offense. And Michael Sean Dugar, as I said, said that Drew Lock exclusively pretty much. Lock has been a second-team guy. And Pete Carroll, by the way, has COVID right now, as does Kyler Murray, just FYI.
And then, they're both out. Both out right now.
Had this to say, presumably before he went into COVID hiding.
Geno's in the lead right now, and he's ahead. And so he ain't looking back, and he's going for it. And Drew's not going to take a back seat, so something's going to happen, you know, and Jake will be there if we need him. So it's going to be exciting to see.
I mean, they also mentioned that they've both been very up and down.
I've been tracking this daily, and it sounds like the offense hasn't gotten a lot done, no matter who's behind center. That Geno like cooks up the second team when he gets the chance, which that's good, but otherwise.
Can I hear that again? There's just something inherently humorous to me about the entire quote.
Geno's in the lead right now, and he's ahead, and so he ain't looking back, and he's going for it.
He ain't looking back.
You don't have a quarterback. Good luck.
Well, that's it for that episode.
And that was another edition of Sipping on Vino, Checking on Gino.
All right. Like we said, we have Connor Orr, better late than never. He'll be joining us tomorrow, we hope.
Wednesday is the day.
Wasn't his fault. He was supposed to be on today, but guess what? The NFL exploded over the last 2 days with big news out of Cleveland.
He extended the story, Miami. Connor Orr, doing some good reporting, learning and through a source that Tom Brady would not be punished. He was the first one to.
There you go.
Connor is a passionate writer.
He's a great reporter, and he was busy, and I absolutely, he said, can we push this? I said, absolutely. So we're pushing it until tomorrow, barring some other Mondo news story that Sports Illustrated needs him for. He'll
well,
be
no,
joining
he can't.
Us.
He's not allowed to cancel 2 days in
it
a row.
It would be a little weird.
Yeah.
But, again, it wouldn't be his fault necessarily.
I think we get how the business works, but I would like to see him show up tomorrow.
Team slogans, Wednesday show. And, yes, we are heading to Rams camp on Friday.
It's 1 o'clock. Hard out.
And before that, we will talk to Justin about that little off-the-cuff comment about something about going to camp with Rachel's podcast on Monday could adversely affect this show. He seemed to not so.
I don't think so.
Is that what he was saying?
I think it's enough.
I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Is that what you took out of that?
I'm still processing.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
We'll have a lot to update. This Tim Patrick news doesn't look good. Might have an update there.
Well, it's 1 o'clock, Greg, so maybe we should close her out.
Cue the music.
The man's got to go. Where? No one knows. No one asks either. Till Wednesday, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.